And then bulbing fennel. Have you ever had bulbing fennel?
No, I don't think so.
Oh my God, that's one of my favorites to roast. Well, let me cut one of these fronds and you can try it.
This was 2 days ago at Powell Gardens. The sun was shining, the breeze was blowing, and the plants were ripe for the eating.
So if you just bite that off and just suck that juice, tell me what that tastes like.
That's strong.
It's licorice, isn't it? Like anise.
Strong.
And that's what that bulb, is that bad? Do you like
no,
that flavor?
No, it's good. It's good. It's just like, I was surprised by how
potent it was.
Right. It tastes like a black jelly bean.
Yes.
I'm Sylvia Maria Gross, in for Gina Kaufman. It's Food Friday on Central Standard, and we're talking about herbs today. Our critics will take us through an herb-infused meal, from appetizers to dessert, hopping restaurants all around Kansas City. But first, we sent Eleanor Klibanoff to visit the country's largest edible garden to learn a little about raising tasty plants and herbs.
Powell Gardens is not a good place to visit if you're hungry. Everything in the edible garden can be eaten, and the smells will remind you of your grandmother's spice rack. But they discourage you from picking your own samples. Unless you're with Barb Fetchenhire, the garden interpreter. Her job is to teach visitors about the edible plants in the garden, and she gave me a tasting tour.
This is called the kitchen garden area, and in here we try to put in a lot of herbs and spices that you'd use readily in the kitchen. But one of the very cool herbs right here is cilantro, and a lot of people don't know that cilantro is really an herb and a spice, because as cilantro, the leaf is the herb that you eat, and when it goes to seed, this is blooming now, when this sets seed, this is then going to be coriander, and coriander is a spice. So you get an herb and a spice off the same plant.
Powell Gardens grows plenty of the common herbs that people like to cook with, but you also see some flowers and flavors that you might not think to use in the kitchen, like violet, which looks like a small purple flower.
And then I tell people, put it in the back of your mouth. And
the whole flower?
Yep. The whole thing, and crush it with your molars and get that flavor on the back of your taste buds.
Mmm. That's so interesting. I know. I'll put anything in my mouth, apparently.
Most people do when I tell them to. How is it?
It's good. It's like, it is minty.
Yeah, it's wintergreen. It has a wintergreen flavor.
That's what it is.
Yeah.
Oh, it's like still there.
Isn't that cool?
Yeah, very cool.
And if it's in the sun and it's getting a lot of heat to it, you get that intense flavor. Mm.
If you want to try the herbs and vegetables grown at Powell Gardens, there is a tasting station with rotating offerings. And if you find something that you really like, the volunteers can help you learn to plant your own at home. Callan Fairchild-Zind is the director of marketing at the gardens, and she says herbs are the perfect starting place for a new gardener.
Yeah. Kind of an entry to gardening, I think, because like Barb said, they're pretty easy for the most part. And so one thing we hope when people come to visit is that they'll be inspired to try something new, whether it's buying it or growing it or both.
So what does Barb, the garden interpreter, recommend for a first-time herb grower?
Basil's a go-to. Basil's easy. Anybody can grow basil, and there's lots of different varieties, and so many people love the flavor, and you can use it in a lot of different recipes. Just continually harvest some of those leaves off of it and don't let it go to flower. If you let it go to flower, don't eat the leaves.
She says herbs are fairly foolproof as long as you have soil and a sunny spot. The biggest thing you need is common sense.
And I always recommend to people to grow it somewhere close to your kitchen, not 5 miles out on your property that every time you're cooking, you're like, it's too far to walk and get it. Put it close in a pot or grow it close to your house so you'll actually use it every time you need to do it.
Usually, the problem with herbs isn't getting them to grow. Fetchenhire says it's getting them to stop growing, like dill.
So this dill is a prolific self-seeder. You'll see it everywhere because once you have dill, you always have dill.
Whether you want dill,
whether
or
you
not.
Want dill or not.
Whether you're using the herbs to season meat or flowers to add color to cheese, everything that grows in the edible gardens can eventually be used in their cafe. And they mean everything. Have you ever eaten a begonia?
Yeah, they're edible.
Are they good?
You tell me. It's
put
kind
the whole
of
thing in my mouth?
Yeah. Remember you asking me about getting sick?
Yeah. Oh.
Well, now you can say you ate one.
The bright red flowers have a biting, sour flavor, almost sour Skittles gone wrong. Everything here may be edible, but that doesn't mean everything is enjoyable. If you're an amateur green thumb, you may want to stick to the basics, like basil, oregano, and that aggressive dill.
That was Eleanor Klibanoff visiting Powell Gardens during a sunny spell this week. For the rest of today's show, we'll be eating our way across Kansas City and hearing how local chefs are working herbs into every course of a meal, from appetizers and finger food to desserts and cocktails. And with us, of course, are our food critics, Charles Ferruzza of The Pitch. Hi, Charles.
Hi, Maria.
So I have to start off the bat. You have expressed some concern in recent shows about the use of herbs in some desserts.
Well, I think chefs get a little wild, but, I've had some I like basil ice cream.
You know? So you're not anti-herb.
Oh, I should say not.
No. Well, let me move on. Mary Block, who writes the food blog Around the Block. Welcome, Mary.
Thank you.
And are you an herb gardener, Mary?
My husband is. Oh. I get the fruits of his labor.
So what technically would we call an herb?
Basically, any plant with leaves, seeds, or flowers, and they're used either medicinally or for food.
But, I mean, most plants have leaves, seeds,
and flowers.
Well, I was
going to say, they have to have that caveat where they're used for food,
right.
Perfumes, medicine.
Right, and no woody stem.
No woody stems. Right. I think that's it.
Oh, I see. Jenny Vergara, mm-hmm. You jumped right in there. The woody stem would make it more into a bush or a tree type thing.
Right.
Okay, but do some things with woody stems have nice tasting leaves?
You know, if you thyme will get woody if you keep it around for a while.
And so will sage,
yeah.
Because I have a very old sage plant.
See, I have a very old thyme plant. They plants always get woody after a while.
Well, if you dry them, they certainly will.
Well, rosemary, I guess, would be an example of more of a woody stem. But
what particularly distinguishes something as an herb, Mary?
Probably the fragrant nature of it. And you can use it. It does have medicinal properties, too.
So, Jenny Vergara, contributing editor for Feast Magazine, what would you say is your favorite herb?
Oh, you know, I can't get away from basil. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's in everything, and it's just tasty. And I happen to like the freshness that it adds. So basil would probably be at the top of my list.
It's also got the most beautiful fragrance. Mm-hmm. I love the smell of basil.
And to me, that signifies summer.
Yeah.
When I'm just happy when I smell it for the first time because I know what's around the corner.
It's also, we should say, a rejuvenating herb.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm. That
it's got real rejuvenating qualities.
Hmm. Well, and I think I'm looking forward. Actually, I'm planting my herb garden this weekend, and I have a lettuce leaf basil plant that I'm really excited about. So it's really a large leafed. I mean, the plant itself has huge basil leaves, and they're kind of ruffled on the edge.
Well,
they're
Jenny,
beautiful.
Is this like a hybrid of lettuce and basil?
You know, it doesn't. No, it's not supposed to be. I mean, it's just basically bred to have broader leaves.
Okay.
And so a lot of restaurants tend to use them because you get more basil for your buck, so to speak.
Interesting.
So I'm looking forward to it.
Well, Jenny, I understand what we're going to do today is kind of called a progressive meal, like people go out and have each course of a meal at different restaurants. Is this something people do?
Oh, I think so. I mean, plenty of people enjoy progressive meals for sure. And it is a fun way to try kind of a lot of different restaurants. I know being in kind of the jobs that we are in on this panel here, I've eaten six meals in a day if I had to. So, and it's, you know, a different course at every restaurant. So you just kind of have to spread it around.
I find myself doing it more often when we have people from out of town and we want to take them to a bunch of places, but we don't want to settle at one location.
And you probably in Kansas City, there are certain neighborhoods that might lend themselves to this, like Westport, perhaps.
Westport, Crossroads.
Yeah, anything walkable.
Plaza.
Yeah.
So let's begin with appetizers and finger food. Charles, what do you have for us in that sort of genre?
Well, what I first put here, and it's really one of my favorites, is at JJ's, which is on the plaza. It's a starter of sauteed mushrooms with garlic butter and dappled with fresh herbs, and you spoon it onto brioche toast.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I grew up going to Chinese restaurants when they almost always had, were they chive pancakes?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I loved those so much.
That would be a good one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, the chives working their way into different types of foods than I think other herbs.
Right, right.
They get that onion taste.
We all grew up with, and these were almost always fresh chives too, chives on our baked potatoes.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Mary, where do you go for something herbal with your starter?
I love the esquite asada at Port Fonda. It's grilled corn with a spicy habanero mayonnaise, poblanos, and epazote. And that is a, it's a leafy vegetable, an herb that actually you put it in tea often. Huh. And the other way a lot of people use it is in their, when they're cooking black beans, if you put them in, it's supposed to lessen the possibility you're going to get gas when you actually eat the beans.
Huh.
But these are just mixed into the corn. And it's just one of my favorite appetizers in the city.
What does epazote taste like?
Gasoline.
It does. Sounds good.
Well, it's very interesting.
It's strong.
I happened upon a batch at the Price Chopper in Roland Park, and it was just laying there unmarked. And I thought, okay, whatever this is, I have to figure it out. And I literally took a picture of it and put it on Instagram and said, tell me what this is, because I'm about to try to figure it out. And actually, Patrick Ryan from Port Fonda was one of the chefs that came back and said, I know exactly what that is because I use it in my place. But
I think epazote also has, if I remember, aphrodisiac qualities.
Oh, fantastic. Oh. Strong like bull.
Mm-hmm.
Perhaps other herbs, I think, maybe do, too.
They all do in some fashion, yeah.
Mexican restaurants also sometimes just garnish their white rice with it just to give it a little pop.
Oh, I'll have to try that. Mm-hmm. Jenny, what do you think in terms of starters and appetizers?
Well, so I am a huge fan of dim sum, and Bowling's was the first place that I had ever had dim sum, so it continues to have a soft spot in my heart. But this particular dish that I'm recommending is basically their home-style chive dumplings, and it's made with a thin rice paper that they make in-house. They actually hand-roll these, and then they stuff it full of chopped chives that they've sautéed with a little bit of garlic, and then they steam them. And you can have them also, they're on the appetizer menu, so at any of the Bowling's you could have it as an appetizer, but they're fresh and green, and they just have that kind of onion kind of, I don't know, there's something very comforting about the flavor of that. I always order it. Every time I go to dim sum, I always get the dumplings, the chive dumplings.
They're delicious.
And I should say, we had a call from Gavin in Overland Park that he says an herb is always a leaf, a spice is a stem or bark or seed. So cinnamon is a bark and ginger is a stem. I would think ginger is like a root, actually. But
yeah, it is
so
a root.
His distinction.
You don't use the stem, but okay.
And a lot of herbs go to seed. And that's how they rejuvenate every year. Mm-hmm.
And I was thinking about cilantro, where the herb itself is the cilantro and the seed is coriander.
Exactly.
We want to hear our listeners' suggestions for where to go for herbal delights, from something simple like a mojito to the exotic like roasted butternut squash ravioli with a rich sage butter, brown butter sauce. Join the conversation, 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. Or you can tweet us at KCURCST. Other finger foods and appetizers.
I had an herb last night I've never had before. I was at the lounge at the American, and one of the tiny little snacks they brought out was a half of a strawberry with ricotta on it and a little tiny square of lovage. Mm. Which
that's an oldie.
It is an oldie.
Yep.
And it's in the same family as carrot, parsley, and dill. And it actually looks like celery, the stalk and everything.
Lovage?
Lovage. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I'd never had it. And it was really quite good. And it just made that bite
It's
pop.
In a lot of medieval recipes.
Okay. It's very witch's brew.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what does that taste like?
Mm-hmm.
What does lovage taste like?
It was
herby.
It kind of tasted like celery.
Celery and parsley had a baby.
Yeah.
Maybe.
That's good.
Huh. Maybe. It's fresh and clean.
Any other starters, Jenny, you like around town?
You know, I think what's interesting right now, and I've seen it at the American for sure, and a couple of other restaurants around town are using nasturtium leaves, which I think is interesting, but I don't know that is that considered an herb?
Sternum?
Nasturtium.
Oh, nasturtium.
Oh, I thought it was a flower. Yeah.
It's part of the, what's the?
Nasturtium.
Gardenia.
I was thinking about flowers because flowers aren't exactly herbs, but it's very similar, I think, the taste and what they sort of offer to the dish.
Well, it's very artful looking, the leaf itself. It's almost like a tiny lily pad, I mean, the way it looks. And so putting it on the plate and in dishes, you know, that you typically wouldn't chop it up and find it in something, but it was decorating delicately something on top. And I think that's kind of an interesting, nasturtium's kind of an interesting one, I think.
And I had that flower also at the lounge last night with a little bit of cheese in where the pistil would be, which was beautiful.
What is the difference between using dried herbs versus fresh herbs? And I don't know if there's certain herbs.
Convenience. I think part of it, yeah.
But it's, some of them taste very different, right?
I think there's a huge difference in flavor. I mean, I wouldn't bother having dried basil. It just doesn't do anything
there's no
for the
flavor
dish.
In there, yeah.
Right.
Well, and you use them in different proportions. So you would use, I think it's you use less dry and more fresh to get kind of the same amount that you would need in a dish. And so you're actually using different amounts of dried versus fresh herbs.
But some herbs like oregano, I've tried using the fresh, but I have no idea how to use that fresh. When dry, it's kind of obvious. It seems like a pretty common herb that you would put into a pasta
oregano,
sauce or something.
Well, you just chop it up and use it like you would dried.
But
maybe
it does
less
taste
so.
Different.
It does.
I mean, it does. I mean, if you put that in a spaghetti sauce, it would be wonderful, but you'd have to add a ton of oregano to get the same flavor.
Yeah. A ton of dried oregano.
Right. Yeah.
I don't buy dried herbs. I really don't.
Well, for one thing, they go bad so quickly.
Mm-hmm. I try to buy everything. If I'm going to buy it, like coriander, I mean, coriander's a seed, obviously, and I just buy small quantities and just use my mortar and pestle to kind of break it up into a powder. But I just don't bother with dry herbs. I just don't think they add anything.
Jenny and Mary, how have you had good luck freezing herbs? I have not.
Oh, there's all kinds of recipes at the end of the season when you're overrun with basil to, you know, freeze them in ice cube trays and pop them in your soup. And, you know, you lose some color value for sure when you try to freeze your herbs. But I always forget they're in there. And then you pull them out and they're black and you think, I'm not going to put that on. You know, I'll just wait till spring. I mean, it's kind of like tomatoes. When tomatoes are gone, they're gone, you know.
But if you do pesto and freeze it, that... Lasts a long time in the freezer. So I'll put cilantro pesto, or I'll just puree cilantro with olive oil.
That's fantastic.
And throw
idea.
It in the freezer.
We have a call here from Judy in Ottawa. Hi, Judy.
Hi there. I'm a big herb gardener. I'm loving your program, but I have a couple of comments. My first one is the comment about how dill and also fennel reseed so prolifically. And the comment I wanted to make is that that's a very important larval plant for swallowtail butterflies. So that's a good thing about having dill and
that means the butterflies like to drink the nectar of those plants? Or?
No, it's larval. They lay their eggs on it, and so then their caterpillar stage eats the leaves and before it metamorphosizes. So that's the first thing. My second comment is about woody stemmed herbs, and bay leaf would have to be one of those because it's bay laurel, and it's essentially a tree or a bush. Mm-hmm. And my third thing was about my very, very most favorite herb is winter savory, which is fabulous. I use it whenever anything calls for thyme, and it's a much more subtle flavor, and it's really, really good. So I'd highly recommend that you search that out.
Well, thank you, Judy, for the clarifications. I should say I always make beans and tomato sauce with bay leaves, but it does seem like something that you wouldn't normally taste in a restaurant and say, oh, I can really taste the bay leaf in this.
You can really taste the difference, though.
Yeah.
If you make your beans without bay leaf, there's a huge difference in flavor. But you know what's interesting is you never see fresh bay leaves. I've never seen them. I've only seen them dried.
Interesting. Well, I want to hear from the listeners. What do you like to eat in your meals, herbs in your meals? 816-235-2888. And let's move on. I want to know about herbal use in different cuisines. And so we've touched on Italian some. What do you think are sort of the classic important Italian herbs, Charles?
Well, oregano, of course. I'm trying to think what my grandmother used to use, because she did grow herbs in her backyard. Dill, she used, and fresh dill, mostly for soups, and parsley.
Yeah, Italian parsley.
Italian parsley.
And basil.
Basil, of course, yes.
Basil, of course.
What do you think is the difference between using parsley and basil in a meal?
The flavor.
Oh, yeah.
Parsley's very bland. Mm-hmm. And in fact, you know, we were talking earlier about how the three of us grew up in an era where almost everyone used dried herbs. And the only time you would ever see parsley was as a garnish on a plate. Mm-hmm. It was never in a food.
Well, it's just like kale. Yeah. I mean, kale used to be the thing on the side, and now it's the thing in the bowl.
Yeah.
We're going to take a short break, but while we're away, we want to hear from you. Where do you go for an herb-infused meal? Call 816-235-2888 with your vote. We'll be taking those calls with the food critics right after this break. Welcome back to Central Standard. I'm Sylvia Maria Gross in for Gina Kaufman, and this is a food show. Today we're talking about herbs and their use in cuisine around Kansas City. Call 816-235-2888 to share your favorite entrees, salads, desserts, or drinks. We're at 816-235-2888, or you can tweet us at KCURCST. And now we're on to the entrees and salads portion of the show. Welcome back, Charles Ferruza of The Pitch.
Good morning. Good morning.
Mary Block of Around the Block. Hello.
Hello.
And we're joined by Jenny Vergara, contributing editor for Feast Magazine. Hi, Jenny.
Hi.
Jenny, where should we go for a salad that has a creative use of herbs?
So my favorite herbaceous salad, I guess is how I'd say it, is at Story. And it's they call it the green salad, and it literally is a green salad. Everything in it is green. And it's got tarragon, mint, pistachios, and this beautiful lemon vinaigrette. And it's just on whatever greens they happen to have. I happened to go last night and had it, and it had arugula and some spinach, I think, in it. So it's just fresh green, and that little bit of mint and tarragon really...
Which, by the way, is a great combination for cooking. Mm.
You know, mint is one of those things that, you know, you always think of it for mojitos or for mint ice cream. But to have it kind of infused in more savory dishes, it really adds a huge kind of fresh pop to whatever it's in. So that's my pick for a salad. I love that green salad at Story.
Hmm. Any other salads, Mary, Charles?
I was thinking more entrees.
Well, I would ask, do people eat herbs like their lettuce or greens? Because I have a friend who's made a basil salad where it was just basil, and you were talking about growing this basil lettuce, but it seems really powerful to me.
Yeah, I'd have to put stuff in it.
Yeah, usually you see it mixed with, I mean, you can even buy at the grocery store now the lettuce mixes that have herbs already kind of mixed in, and you can really tell the pop of the herbs that are kind of mixed in with the other lettuces. So I don't know that I've ever had a salad that was
I have made a cilantro salad, but it has other things in it, celery and olives and whatnot. And one of my favorite things to do with asparagus in the spring is a panzanella verde, and that has a ton of mint and cilantro in it, as well as the asparagus and
the one bread. Salad that does that calls for no herbs whatsoever is a Caesar salad.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So if you want to go herb-free, that's your suggestion.
Mm-hmm.
We had a call from Susie in Overland Park who just pointed out every time she says herb, her husband, who's from England, says herb, and she wants to know what the correct pronunciation is. I don't know that we can weigh in on that, but I believe here in the United States, the more common pronunciation would be herb, but I always find it amusing when people throw in the herb.
Yeah, Eddie Izzard, who's a famous British comedian, has a whole shtick about, you know, herbs versus herbs, and it's literally just the British pronunciation versus the American. So
we have here Gordon Prairie Village. Hi, Gordon.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Good morning.
Jenny, great to hear you on the radio talking about food.
Hey, Gordon, how are you?
I'm very well. I wanted to just mention a little freshie up on the west side. I think Lindsay started her business through the fact that she had an abundance of herbs growing, and she uses herbs in a really beautiful way in her snow cone desserts up at Little Freshie on the west side, and I wanted to bring that to everyone's attention.
And we're going to get into desserts a little more later, but she also, I think they have shrubs there, kind of soda that also has herbal infusions.
Mm-hmm. Almost everything that she does. And I live on the West Side, as they call it, and Lindsay is a neighbor, and her backyard is prolific. I mean, when she first started her snow cone stand, she took me back there, and it is amazing. And they just reseed year after year, and they got bigger and bigger and bigger. So I think it was just a function of trying to get that freshness into her snow cones that first started, you know, her adding herbs to it. But I love her stuff.
Now let's get back to the entree. Charles, what do you have for us in terms of entrees with herbs?
Well, I'm a big fan of ethnic food with herbs. And my favorite is, and especially when I'm not feeling especially well, I love to go to the Vietnam Cafe in Columbus Park and have chicken with ginger or beef with lemongrass and basil chicken. They're all they're all rejuvenating and healthy and fresh, and they really, I think the herbs they choose really complement the meats they have. So,
well, and if you've ever bought herbs at the grocery store, they're expensive. Yeah. And so when you go to the Vietnam places, especially Vietnam Cafe, that's one of my favorites too. I mean, you get this big giant plate of fresh herbs, all different kinds, and you think, how much money, how much food cost is sitting right there on that plate? I use every bit of those fresh herbs in everything I get.
And their ginger chicken is so gingery, which I love. Mm-hmm. And it's just, I just feel so much better afterwards.
Mm-hmm. And what I love too is the pho soup in Vietnamese restaurant, where you do actually put in the cilantro and the basil yourself and jalapeno, however much you can take. And it just, it's so fragrant that moment it hits it. And I notice that a lot of recipes tell you to add those herbs right at the very end. Mm-hmm. Don't know if a certain amount of time makes it lose flavor.
Once it cooks, it does lose flavor.
Or if it does, but does that depend on the herb? There's some that should cook for hours in there and others that should just go at the last minute?
Well, if you use dried, you can cook with it, obviously. If you use fresh, it's always usually stirred in at the last minute. So I think it's just the delicate nature of fresh versus dried. Because dried can take as much cooking as you can throw at it.
Right.
The other herbs I think of in Asian food are the kaffir leaf and lime leaf. I think you hear about it in Thai recipes, but I don't know exactly what they add.
Well, they add a citrusy quality. And aren't they isn't it a kaffir lime leaf?
Is that what it is? Okay.
And they do add, like lemongrass does, a real citrusy note without being, you know, acidy and lemony.
Right, exactly. I think it's all that kind of limey flavor with the kaffir lime leaf, for sure, without the citrus.
Mary, what are your thoughts in terms of entrees with herbs?
I love the, when restaurants do a hanger steak with a chimichurri sauce, the lounge at Bluestem does one, and also the farmhouse. And each chef does a little something different with their chimichurri. It's basically an Argentinian sauce.
But don't they pretty much use the same array of herbs for that?
Well, you know, parsley, oregano, garlic, olive oil, red wine, vinegar are standards, but sometimes they have a little cilantro, little mint, even basil.
Poropos has a delicious chimichurri, one of the best.
And it's very similar to a Mexican salsa verde, which usually has anchovy and capers, garlic as well.
I don't know if it's a particularly cultural thing, but are there certain meats and herbs that just go together? You think about lamb and mint.
Yep.
And is that just...
That's a classic.
Has to go together?
Yep.
Why?
Oh, I think it just goes back to classic culinary techniques. I mean, you know, the recipes that have been handed down that continue to be classics, and that there's a reason for it. It also, I think, has to do with what's in season. You know, typically you've got your mint growing in the spring and you have your lamb in the spring, and so those two things were put together. So I think it even goes back to the seasons in which these animals were typically used to be slaughtered, obviously, and served. So.
And you don't want an herb that's going to overpower the taste of the meat. And lamb has a very distinctive flavor. And mint can be subtle if you use it properly.
And at this time of year, to make a mint pesto is just wonderful with lamb.
Let's get into pestos. I mean, I learned to make it with basil, but you can do it with a lot of different herbs or salad greens like arugula.
Arugula is a great, even spinach you can make a pesto. It's basically a nut of some sort, and you can play with that. Pine nut, walnut, pistachios, and then either mint.
I've used almonds too.
Yeah, cilantro, any herb, and then garlic and olive oil. And if you want, cheese, like Parmesan.
Where in Kansas City has the best pesto?
And you're talking about, it's easier to find traditional basil pesto than...
any kind. Yeah. But, I mean, I love basil pesto, but I'll try the others.
You know, that's a real seasonal choice.
Yeah.
I've seen creative and interesting pesto put out on the side of specific meals, but I think that's something that varies from week to week or dish to dish.
I tend to like pesto on pizzas too. So I was just at El Lizarone, and had their pesto pizza, and it was delicious.
Oh, so Lazzarone, they do one.
They just use it in place of sauce, basically.
Pizza Bella does that also. And kale pesto is a big thing now, too. I know Westside Local does a kale pesto on their spaghetti.
Hmm. Yeah, I see it in dressings and on pizzas, but I just prefer it on pasta. Mm-hmm. But we have Michael Smith here, the chef in Kansas City. Hi, Michael. Thanks for joining us.
Hi. How are you?
Well, what do you have to add in terms of herbs in dishes in Kansas City or abroad? I understand you have some thoughts from Paris.
Well, years ago, and this very famous chef, world-class chef, Joël Robuchon, has 25 Michelin stars around the world. And he, back in the 80s, when I ate in his restaurants in Paris, at Chez Jamin, he kind of pioneered the little herb salad, complete herbs, no lettuces. So parsley, mint, lots of chervil, tarragon, dill, and these would appear as little garnishes on some kind of seafood dish or whatever. But he used that a lot, and it was incredible. And in my restaurants, we have some customers from Mediterranean areas, and when they come in, because I learned how they eat at home by just talking to them, I'll put a bowl of ice water on the table with large bouquets of herbs for them to just eat as they're eating dinner.
And to just kind of chew on between bites?
Yeah, I put big sprigs of cilantro, mostly mint, parsley, lots of oregano, dill, basil, and I just fill this bowl up like a big old flour base, and they eat that as they eat dinner because they do that at home. So I'm going to do that. I'm doing a dinner for Blue Stem on Monday night, all Israeli dinner, 7 courses, and I'm going to put on each table a little bowl of all these fresh herbs with some olive oil so they can eat and you know, smell that during the dinner.
Well, Michael,
can I
tell you what dish you have that I would love to have a little vase of herbs with? Your bread and your house-made ricotta cheese. I'd like to have some herbs with that.
You eat that and I'll give you a bowl of herbs, dang.
Let me ask you, though, Michael. Cilantro is a controversial herb because there are those people who just hate it. And I know that apparently it's actually something genetic about their taste buds. But what do you do as a chef knowing that there's just like this certain set of people that just hate that? I mean, do you think they avoid some Mexican food, let's say, that would tend to have it? Or do you tend to keep it aside for certain dishes?
Well, I think the people that really don't like it, they're very selective. And if it, you know, they may request at the table, is there a lot of cilantro in this? If there's a little bit, they might be able to handle it if it's mixed into a salsa verde, you know, like a salsa crudo or something. But if there's a lot of it, they'll avoid the dishes. But I don't care. I cook with it. I don't care. we take it out when we can. But if we can't, we can't, because I love it. I love it. But you're right. It can taste like soap to a lot of people. And when I first started eating cilantro, I didn't like it very much. And then I love cilantro.
Well, Michael.
Cilantro and mint and oregano together are incredible.
Yeah, I think so, too.
Thanks for calling, Michael.
Thank you.
What are there other controversial herbs like that?
Well, I mean, everybody has their own unique taste buds. And it's funny, I've always thought cilantro tasted lemony. Had a lemony.
You have the gene. You've been blessed.
I guess.
The positive one, not the one that makes it taste like soap, which I think is the other gene.
You know, not everybody likes dill. Mm-hmm. Dill's a very potent herb, and I love it. I could eat it every day.
That was the only herb my mother cooked with when we were growing up. I mean, it was out of a jar, but that was it. You know, salmon, dill, whatever. And so now I don't eat it in anything.
Really?
She kind of poisoned me against it.
It's such a fresh addition to a salad, though.
I know. It just brings me back to some meals probably I didn't like.
Anywhere else for a salad or an entree you'd recommend?
I do. So I want to recommend Room 39's goat cheese gnocchi with lobster, local mushrooms, and nettle cream. Mm-hmm. So nettle is kind of a very, it's basically a stinging nettle is what it's called.
And we grew up calling it a weed.
A weed, absolutely. It's one of those things that's a very hot thing to forage right now, but when it pricks you, it stings. And so you have to go out with special gloves and long sleeve shirts and if you're going to forage them. But you basically, you know, kind of pinch off the stem and immediately put it into hot water. And once you've boiled it, then the stinging properties are gone. And at that point, you can use it just like sautéed spinach or anything else. And it is in this cream sauce on the gnocchi, which Ted Appinger, the chef from Room 39, actually taught me how to make. So I
does he go out and forage for nettles?
His dad does some foraging, so he gets some morels from his dad, and I think his nettles may come from his dad too. Hmm.
And I want to say back to flowers. I love marigolds in a dish. Marigolds, you know, they have that spicy fragrance and a slight spicy taste, and they always add a real wonderful pop of color to any dish.
I'm getting just back to the nettle, though. What do nettles taste like?
They just add a really grassy, kind of fresh green flavor. I mean, it's a little bit, a little grassier than spinach. Spinach to me is very mild, and this just has a little bit more of kind of that wild, grassy flavor to it. But it's texturally similar to how you would use spinach.
That's funny, though, because it's not green.
No, green.
But it is green?
It is.
It's not like little spikies?
That's
what I thought of nettle being.
No, big leaves.
Oh,
big leaves that have kind of prickers.
Well, we're going to go to a break right now, but we are moving on to desserts and cocktails and other beverages with herbs in them. So please call in with your recommendations, 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. Don't go away. With Charles Frouza, food writer for The Pitch, Mary Block of Around the Block, and Jenny Vergara, contributing editor for Feast Magazine. We're talking about herbs. I'm Sylvia Maria Gross, in for Gina Kaufman, and we're taking your recommendations for local restaurants that incorporate herbs. We're talking desserts and cocktails now, nearing the end of our progressive meal. So join the conversation at 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. Or tweet us. Our handle is at KCURCST. Charles, like I said at the beginning of the show, you were concerned about some herbal concoctions recently. Do you feel like it's become almost cliche?
I don't think so yet, no. I mean, when McDonald's starts having, you know, herbal fries, then it will be. But no, I don't think it's cliche yet. I think sometimes people use herbs as an alternative to actually being creative, but I think the use, creative use of herbs is wonderful.
And I knew it was getting serious using herbs in cocktails when at Justice Drugstore, the bartender was also a botanist.
That is awesome.
Chris Canaster, I haven't thought about him in a while.
I love herbal cocktails, and it seems like, it's become the past 5 years or so that they've gotten popular, and I hope that they don't go out of style. I don't know if there's any threat
of that.
Well,
let me ask this. I don't drink, but I'm always happy when a bartender makes me an imaginative mocktail using herbs, but don't they tend to be mostly infusions of some sort?
As opposed to
fresh herbs?
Yeah, you know, I've seen it a lot as a simple syrup. So they'll make a simple syrup for the cocktail and they'll put whatever the herb is in it. But I've also been served cocktails that have a giant sprig of rosemary in it as well.
And often you muddle, like with a mojito, the mint, it gets muddled in there.
And a simple syrup is like a sugar and water.
Right.
And then would you put the herb in? How would you get the herb in there?
Well, typically, I think you just put the whole, whatever it is, sprig, you know,
leaf,
kind of a bouquet garni, right? Just kind of throw that in there and let it boil. And so all the flavors will infuse. If you actually chop it up, then obviously you have to strain it. Unless you want little pieces of the herb in the drink. That could be a totally different thing as well.
There are issues about whether you chop or rip or, you know, how you actually treat basil and I assume other herbs, too. I don't know if it creates a different flavor.
I prefer when I'm cooking with basil to tear it with my hands because I think metal adds a weird, weird quality to it.
It also blackens more quickly.
Mm-hmm.
So would you say in general when cooking with herbs or is that something specific to basil or cilantro?
Mint especially. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you're making a mint pesto, you need to wait till the very last minute. It's a lot of things you can make ahead. I find mint pesto...
Well, and
15
I think,
minutes max.
Yeah. I think the most important thing that I've learned about cooking with herbs is that you really have to crush them. I mean, you have to release the essential oils that are in the leaf itself because that's where the flavor is. And typically, if you just throw the whole thing in, then you'd have to cook it and cook it and cook it to get that flavor to come out. But if you crush it or, you know, tear it, obviously, to release those essential oils, that's key to getting the flavor in there.
And we have a call from Tom in Redbridge. Hi, Tom.
Hi. How are you?
I'm well.
Good.
You have a question that kind of gets to that issue of how you get the flavor out of herbs.
That's right. Earlier, you made a comment, or one of your panelists made a comment about using herbs in cooking, and that often the herb would, especially fresh herbs, would lose their flavor in the cooking process. But for years, I've made a tomato sauce for pasta where I use a rather liberal amount of dried basil, beginning at the, you know, at the very beginning of the cooking process until the tomatoes are cooked down and that kind of stuff, as a part of that process. And I've always thought it was delicious, but now I'm wondering if that's the right thing to do.
Well, people have been doing it using dried basil, for uh-huh. years. It's not as flavorful as fresh basil, but if you use a lot of it, you can get something out of it.
Well, and the key is freshness. So if you are going to use dry herbs, make sure you're using herbs that are fresh, yeah. that you've just purchased at the store. And it's not something, we are all notorious. I finally went through my spice cabinet and just threw out everything because it was just all too old.
They say after a year in mm-hmm. in the trash. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's a good idea to mark your mm-hmm. jars. But you could also just add a handful of pulled chopped basil at the end, and that'll infuse a little bit extra in addition to what you were already doing.
Okay, well, thanks. I appreciate your input.
Thanks, Tom. And we have Roger here from Lee's Summit. Hi, Roger. Roger?
Roger? Yes.
You had a comment about hibiscus and beer?
Yeah. I'm a home brewer, and I use it when I make a mead a lot, the hibiscus flower. And I also wanted to comment about the Boulevard Gosa. If you've ever had the hibiscus gosa, it's a great summer drink.
Hibiscus gosa. Does anybody know, Jenny?
Sour beer. I mean, basically, a gosa is one of the traditional sour beers. And they've become very popular in the last couple of years. I think hibiscus is kind of interesting because it is hugely floral. I mean, if you've ever tasted
like
a hibiscus tea.
Well, it's not an herb, we should say.
Yes. No, absolutely.
And I love hibiscus tea, but there is a sour quality to it. I mean, it's tart, not citrusy. It's sour, mm-hmm. I think. But I like it.
What about you, Mary? Favorite herbal cocktail?
You know, there's one that I haven't tried yet, but it's calling out to me, and I'm going to have to get to Manifesto very soon. Ryan Mabee and his crew are always so creative, and they have a seasonal menu, and the spring menu has what's called the Kai Smash, and I have a great nephew named Kai, too, so I want to check it out. It says on the menu that it's a distant cousin of the Gin Ricky, and it's a blend of gin, lime, and fresh basil, and to me, that just sounds very refreshing.
That cucumber and I think mint or basil, anything with those two things on a menu, I usually go for it. I don't know what it is about the cucumber, whether it absorbs that herbal flavor.
Well, cucumber I've had cucumber mocktails with mint, but cucumber on its own is very cooling and refreshing and really nice on a hot day.
What about you, Jenny?
In terms of cocktails?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's really interesting. I haven't had many cocktails this season off spring menus. I just haven't been out yet to kind of sample it. And over the winter, I just really got into whiskey. And, you know, whiskey doesn't lend itself necessarily mm-hmm. to an herbal infusion.
I drink whiskey, I put nothing in it except maybe an ice cube.
Maybe an ice cube. Yeah, if you're a purist, for sure. So I don't really have a cocktail to add to the mix because I've been a whiskey girl. I will tell people I'm a gin girl, but secretly I'm a whiskey drinker.
Particularly over the winter.
Yes.
And we've kind of skipped over desserts. What mm-hmm. about your dessert preferences?
Yeah, so my dessert actually blends kind of two different spots. So if you truly are doing a progressive dinner, this will be the one for you. I have to do a shout out for the Heirloom Bakery and Hearth. This is in the Brookside East area.
63rd and Oak.
63rd and Oak. The darling couple that owns that has got their doors open after a year, and they are doing a salted rosemary shortbread cookie. So savory, salty, buttery, sweet. Perfect. I mean, it's just absolutely craveable. It's just one of those kind of combinations that's just delicious. And so I said I would have that with a scoop of Glacé Ice Cream's Honey Lavender Ice Cream. I thought those two pairings would be great. And what's interesting about lavender is, there's culinary lavender that you use, and it's typically using the fresh flower and not the dried stuff that's in the sachet that's in your grandma's underwear drawer.
Oh, really? So it's different.
Yeah. So there's a lot of people who go, ooh, lavender, because that's what they're thinking of is the dried, very strong strong. And then the smell of lavender also gets very strong when you dry it. So typically it's used fresh, but I love glacé, and he does a lot of different infusions and combinations.
He does, especially in the summer. He'll do a lime basil sorbet or pineapple cilantro, and those are so refreshing when it's hot out.
And we did get a tweet from Parkville Coffee, and they say they've been trying herbs in their cold brew coffee, I guess, and teas. Fresh mint and basil can be incredible in toddy or lemonade. And they included a picture of what looks like a sugar cookie with lavender frosting sprinkled with lavender flowers and buds. So don't know if that's from Parkville Coffee or somebody that they work with. But lavender, I mean, I think that, yeah, as a fragrance, it's powerful. But as a flavoring, it's kind of light and delicate in a way.
Very much so.
Charles, you had some pie recommendations.
Well, first I want to say that this is a great restaurant. It's currently closed in Lawrence. It's the Lady Bird Diner on Massachusetts. They had a fire, or they were affected by a fire on that street in March. They're going to reopen in July. But the woman who owns it, Meg Hereford, she makes some fabulous pies. I mean, really interesting, very creative. I didn't think I would like blueberry basil, but it's a perfect combination. Mm-hmm. And she makes a lavender cherry pie and a peach cilantro pie, which that also sounds like a very bizarre combination. Yum. They really work together beautifully.
Is there a difference between using herbs in cold desserts versus hot, do you think? I mean,
well, they're obviously baked, so there's both.
You know, I wonder if the flavors emerge in a different way.
I don't know.
You know, I don't know the answer to that. I had a rosemary olive oil cake last night at Story for my dessert, and it was absolutely delicious. And those cakes are very moist. I think he puts a little simple syrup on it to kind of just keep it really moist. But, you know, it's obviously baked in the batter as well and then drizzled on top with the simple
syrup.
Was
this a Story? We have to put a shake. That's one of the very few restaurants that has a pastry chef. We have to put a shout out to Elizabeth Paradise. Mm.
That's where?
It was delicious. At Story.
At Story. And I should mention that in terms of cocktails, we have a cocktail on our, will be on our website later, a recipe for the Lay Lady Lillet at Westside Local. We'll have it's with basil and vodka, I think orange infused vodka. We're going to have the recipe for that later on if anybody wants to try it at home.
You know, and before we close, I think we ought to give a shout out to all the local farmers who are doing herbs, you know, Cultivate KC, Roots for Refugees. Go to a farmer's market and buy them there, because people are breaking their backs to bring us fresh herbs.
Absolutely.
And Dale called to tell us that you can buy bay leaf plants at nurseries and grow the plant yourself. It can grow tree size in the right environment. You just keep trimming them back inside the house. It has to be warm, and you keep it in the house all year, though you can take it out in the summertime. So you can grow your own bay leaves.
Interesting.
We have a call from Selena in Parkville. Hi, Selena.
Hello.
And are you a bartender?
I'm not a bartender. I'm a server.
Ah.
At District Poorhouse in Waldo. Mm-hmm. It's a fairly new restaurant and bar.
Fairly new in the sense it's 2 years old. Yeah.
Well, yes, fairly new, 2 years old. but we are, we infuse a lot of our own liquors, and we serve several cocktails that have fresh muddled herbs in them. And one of the favorite ones, it's called the 816, and it's a gin drink. It's made with our rosemary-infused gin, and it has a balsamic reduction in it, and it's served, like you were talking about, with a garnish of just a full sprig of rosemary in it.
You know, we haven't given a lot of love to rosemary, I feel like, this hour. I don't know if that's just something we've overlooked, but...
It's so good.
I like rosemary with grilled meats, you know.
Absolutely.
It's a very distinctive herb.
And we should add, I think that some of these restaurants also have herbs as decor. And I think that just kind of tells us what we'll taste when we go inside. And that's all the time we have for today's Central Standard. Food critics, it's been fun. Charles Frouza of The Pitch.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mary Block of Around the Block.
Great to be here.
And Jenny Vergara, contributing editor for Feast Magazine. Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
We're compiling a list from our critics' recommendations and yours. You can find that on KCUR.org later this afternoon. You can listen to this conversation again or subscribe to our podcast there as well. Central Standard is produced by Matthew Long Middleton and myself, with Fridays by Jen Chen. We get lots of help from Patrick Quick and interns Katie Knight and Andrea Tudhope. Linda Scher runs the board for us every day. Today is Eleanor Klibanoff's last day at KCUR. You heard from her at Powell Gardens at the beginning of the show. She's an NPR fellow and has made some great contributions to Central Standard and KCUR over the past 3 months. Good luck, Eleanor. Our music is by Spoonbender Labs. I'm Sylvia Maria Gross, filling in for Gina Kaufman. That's The Standard. Have a great weekend, everyone.